What a delightful day. I just want to really say what a, I don't know, what a joy it is. We're just thinking of my colleagues and how amazing you all are, and just kind of rejoicing in that. So, yeah, how do I say? Hard act to follow, but I'll do what I can. But nonetheless, it's been quite extraordinary what you've been sharing. So I'm here to talk about the fourth of the Brahmavihara, equanimity. Or Upeka. And it's real interesting because in lots of ways it's quite different than the other three. And I'm going to do a few quotes in the middle of this from some different teachers and the Buddha, because they just really jumped out at me. So for better or for worse, I like quotes. But equanimity is the last of the four, and it brings balance and non-reactivity. It's kind of what the word suggests, towards things that arise in our lives. And it's kind of in the context of the other three, of loving kindness and compassion and sympathetic joy. But equanimity is this amazing quality that we can cultivate, because that's what the Brahmavihara is in a sense are about, is cultivating these things, but also it emerges in our, from our practice. It's a little unique in that way. So life, you know, life can be tumultuous, hard, beguiling in its pleasures. And what I often hear from people, you know, in this role is a need for equanimity. Like, how do I navigate all this stuff? How do I find some peace in the middle of, especially the hard things, but, you know, the easy things could be tricky too. You know, what if instead of being pushed and pulled by all of these things, we could remain stable, centered, and alive? What if instead of reacting, we could respond from a place of awareness, of equanimity, that includes in it kindness and compassion, that they're all kind of woven together? So let's just take a quick look at the problem that equanimity addresses, which you might call reactivity. You know, remember the Buddha said that the root of our problem of suffering is ignorance that keeps us from being free. It's attachment and aversion. We grasp after things, a second noble truth. Because we tend to do this, then we're at the mercy of good circumstance and bad circumstance. So it's this grasping, this ignorance that prevents equanimity, that keeps us from just being able to be heartfelt, stable, grounded, and alive no matter what. So, you know, think of your own life experience. I mean, sometimes things go well. Sometimes they don't. How are you with that? And most of us, most of the time, I sometimes think we're like reptilian. You know, when things are really good and pleasurable, we want more. When things are bad, we want to get away. That's just our first gut reaction. And you've experienced this, right? I mean, I don't know. The perfect beach, the perfect linguine, the perfect love partner. Don't you kind of want more of that? Or what about the difficult side? You know, the bug bite, the broken leg, the broken heart, the barking dog, you know, the political opponent. Don't we kind of want to get away? Want it to stop? So, and when we look at human life, you know, the people that, well, kind of run things, it's amazing to see how much the rich and powerful, who we would hope will be making wise choices since they kind of control the world, seem to be so easily caught in those fangs of attachment, desire, and aversion, not equanimity. You know, especially look at all the powerful people, especially men, who just act out desire for power or sex or whatever, and there's downfalls and they make enormous mistakes. It's like the opposite of equanimity, of just being able to be stable and conscious in the middle of all this tumult of life. So it's kind of unique and compared to the other Brahmaviharas insofar as it's more internal and less relational, just a matter of degree, than the other three. It's not so much in the circumstance of human contact so much, but also what we generate inside ourselves. It's a balanced and mindful response to what happens inside of us, to us, but how we are with it, pleasant and unpleasant. It arises out of wisdom. And in a sense, it's another way of seeing the fruition of the path. You know, the dynamic nature of inner freedom. The degree to which we realize freedom from clinging is also the degree to which equanimity arises, because we're not slaves to our attachments and aversions. And this is a deep and transformational change. And you can see it in great beings. Dalai Lama, there's a way in which he just doesn't react. He laughs sometimes, and he feels sadness sometimes, but is within the sphere of this great presence. So it doesn't mean we're like talking about being automatons, but rather having this depth, this rootedness at the same time. Steve Armstrong, he's one of the great Western teachers. He says, we learn to have a more balanced mind and relationship in relation to everything we experience. Over time, equanimity becomes a dominant factor of mind, and we don't get caught in reactivity. We stay in touch with, but not entangled in, what's arising. In time, it becomes more enduring, and life goes on without being caught in clinging. The mind sees everything, aware of everything, but not attached to anything, fully in touch with life. Equanimity is one step shy of liberation, which is uprooting all defilements in the mind. The Buddha called it the unshakable release of the mind. So, that's pretty deep. And how does that relate to the other three? How do we relate with it, the other three? And how can we cultivate it? Because we've heard about loving kindness and compassion and sympathetic joy, and we cultivate those very much in relationship with circumstance and other people, and then the whole business with the phrases, that whole procedure of the practice. We're visualizing people, we're bringing up and imagining people and cultivating loving kindness or compassion in relationship to those imagined people, or as some stories have said, in terms of actual human circumstance. So it's very much in encounters with others. And equanimity can underlie all these responses and also complement them. So it really shows how the Brahmaviharas are in fact a set of four that really work with each other and complement each other. It's really worth, when you investigate them in your own hearts, just kind of just weave around and see how they all interconnect. It's really beautiful. And once again, one of the Buddha's lists, it seems sort of arbitrary in the beginning, and then the more you get into it, the more it's like, oh my God, he really saw this interconnection. It's so deep. So baked into this sense of equanimity is this deep realization that everything's changing and nothing's permanent. And once we really get that, and we stop trying to make that reality stop, then we can find a deep and abiding peace in the middle of those changes. We're not fighting it anymore. We're just seeing it clearly. And in terms of the near enemy and the far enemy, in particular, what's important to realize is that equanimity is not indifference, which is the near enemy of equanimity. Indifference would be kind of a closing away, a pulling away, a removal from the conditions of life. Indifference is one of the things that just kills relationships. You know, a couple relationship, if one person, for whatever reason, seems too hard, or running up against difficulties they don't want to deal with, they get indifferent and pull back, it's the kiss of death. So equanimity does not mean that. It means, as all Dharma practice does, it means leaning into and seeing clearly. So it's really a full arriving equanimity, a full embracing of life in all its conditions. And it becomes clearer when we, again, think of it in the context of the other Brahmaviharas, because all of those are about fully arriving. Loving kindness is, karuna, compassion is, upeka is. In every instance, we're called to step past our initial reactivity, which often is to get away. You know, we see the suffering rat on the sidewalk and we don't reach toward, we want to leave, but it's like, actually, that rat is suffering. We need to turn toward. So it's the same thing here, really turning toward. So with equanimity, you can see how awareness or mindfulness is interlinked with how we cultivate equanimity. They completely work hand in hand. So turning toward Gil Fronsdal, great Western teacher, he says, equanimity is one of the most sublime emotions of Buddhist practice. It is the ground for wisdom and freedom and the protector of compassion and love. While some think of equanimity as dry neutrality or cool aloofness, mature equanimity produces a radiance and warmth of being. The Buddha described a mind filled with equanimity as abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility, and without ill will. And he says the Pali word, upekkha, also means to look over, to look over. It refers to equanimity arising from the power of observation to see without being caught by what we see. When well developed, such power gives rise to a great sense of peace. So this non-reactivity of equanimity, the whole sense of having a broad presence no matter what, it's not something forced, and it's not repressing what we may be feeling or experiencing. Gratitude, rather, it's an attitude that we can cultivate on the one hand, but it's also, it emerges from realization, from insight that comes out of our practice. So both ways it happens. That actually happens with all four Brahma Viharas, but it's clearer with this in a way. It, you know, clearly this arises out of insight, the non-stickiness of equanimity. And we can cultivate it by inclining the mind toward the broad view of the activity of stability no matter what happens. That's kind of the cultivating part. But it also arises because we see how equanimity comes from it. And as we cultivate awareness or mindfulness of every aspect of experience, we gradually see through the seeming solidity of it all. Nothing static, because it's always changing. There's no inherent self anywhere, because it's always changing and interconnecting. So what's to get upset about? What is there to knock us off our centeredness? The more we see that. And disconcerting, as in one way, seeing that can be, because it kind of, you know, turns upside down some of our solid sense of things. It also brings this great peace, this harmony, this natural equanimity. There's nothing to grasp. There's nobody to grasp it. So what's the problem? Teacher Ruth King says, equanimity is an invaluable inner resource that is cultivated through awareness. It is the experience of knowing the movement of the mind without reactiveness, an experience of grounded presence amidst extremes. When the mind is steady and responsive, we can say to ourselves, this moment is like this, and it doesn't have to be different right now. I can allow what is here and offer what is needed. So isn't that interesting right there? And this is from a woman of color who has experienced discrimination in all kinds of ways. And to learn, you know, she's very active. She's a longtime activist. And to be able to fully experience what is and allow what is here and offer what is needed, which may mean being an activist. But it just shows us equanimity is a stability that is not passive nor disconnected. And she says, to continue what she said, equanimity is awareness so spacious that whatever arises in our mind and heart, whether agreeable or disagreeable, is small and incidental compared to awareness itself. In other words, when we are equanimous, nothing is left out of heart's view. Isn't that beautiful? Nothing left out of heart's view. It's a very challenge and the also opportunity of this practice, that it works no matter what. And we were talking earlier at the beautiful exchange about the difference between pain and suffering. And this kind of gets to this, because in the middle of painful circumstance, which, you know, we'll all encounter, and God knows many people in the world are encountering a lot, it doesn't mean that they can't also find equanimity there. And maybe that's the salvation of the world, that more and more people, as in some ways people are understanding, this small, tiny little globe, we have to find some stability in the middle of conflict, and then maybe conflict unwinds. So the more we can see this and realize this, the more equanimity arises. And if we can share this understanding with those around us, then this equanimity of spirit that finds rest and balance no matter what, this is one of the gifts there is. You know, because I've had some exchanges recently with some people I work with in Dharma world, and, you know, some circumstance erupted in their family, and they could have just kind of gone into hysterics themselves, but they didn't. Even though it was painful, even though there was loss, they just saw it, they saw the conditions, and they stayed present. They stayed in equanimity, and that was the gift they could give to this other person in their family who was lost in hysterics. But then someone was listening, someone was present, someone was big enough to embrace the whole range of emotions and terror and pain, and it helped this other person who was lost in it not be lost a little bit. Pretty beautiful. About the meditation, Sharon Salzberg says this: equanimity is taught as the final meditation among the Brahmaviharas because it provides the balance for loving kindness, compassion, and sympathetic joy. These others open one's heart in a wish for well-being. May you be happy. May you be free of suffering. May your joy never cease. Equanimity balances those heartfelt wishes with a recognition that things are the way they are. So that's a very beautiful summation. And as many of you know, Sharon Salzberg is in a lot of ways one of the core teachers who has really brought the Brahmaviharas sort of front and center into our practice. So it's beautiful the way she puts that. At the last quote I want to read is what the Buddha said in terms of the relationship between equanimity and nibbana, awakening. Says, the enlightenment factor of equanimity has been rightly expounded by me, Buddha. When developed and cultivated, it leads to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to nibbana. So there's this real bright light there, this real connection. And it's sort of beautiful how, you know, Lauren very clearly, and it's true, that there's two wings of the Dharma. There's insight side and compassion side. And in one way, they're different or complementary or separate. And we learn from how they're separate, and in another way, it just winds into a circle. And they're not separate, and both are true. So it just shows how this fourth of the four Brahmaviharas is also a conduit, a doorway toward awakening itself. The Buddha said, thus, above, below, across, and everywhere, and to all as to oneself, dwell pervading the entire world with a mind imbued with equanimity, vast, exalted, measureless, without hostility, without ill will. So it's interesting in terms of how we practice with this. It's the degree to which we use phrases or not is kind of up to you. It may be useful. You may not have to use them in exactly the same way of visualizing different persons. And it might be that doing mindfulness practice with equanimity in mind would be perfect. And it's interesting that I read the suttas a lot. And just recently, I finally figured out that the whole business with phrases, the Buddha never taught that himself. That comes out of the Visuddhimagga, which was created by Buddhaghosa in the 5th century in India, or was it Sri Lanka? I can't remember. And Sharon Salzberg kind of pulled out of that. And it's a very fundamental, wonderful source. But it's helpful that it wasn't really taught by the Buddha. So that kind of gives some latitude to approach it in a way that works for you. I mean, it's all about skillful means. So whatever works for you. And the phrases are brilliant, especially in terms of loving kindness and compassion, because it really helps us work with something to train ourselves, to move ourselves out of our natural state, which might be quite other than loving kindness. Could be just self-interest or, you know, criticism of others. But in this case, maybe not so much. It's hard to say. I will offer phrases. And one phrase that people use is, this is the way it is right now. And I'm going to put up on a screen share in a moment. But this is the way it is right now, which is another version of simply being aware of what is happening. So that's one way you could use a phrase just to remind yourself to be aware right now. Here, I'll do the screen share thing. Yeah, so here you can see these other phrases that you might consider. May I open to how it is right now with more balance and ease? May my heart be at ease with the changing conditions of life. May I be open, balanced, and peaceful. May I learn to see the arising, passing away of all things with equanimity. Joy and sorrow arise and pass away. This is a natural part of life's journey. I care for you, but can I control your happiness or unhappiness? Isn't it interesting how these are all interwoven with some of what we've heard in the other three Brahma-Viharas? May I be at peace with your journey. May I accept how it is for you right now with equanimity. And by the way, for any of you all, this particular document is down in the Sims website. You should burrow down into the Buddhist Essentials and then Resources. And then Brahma-Viharas, it's down in there. If you ever are interested